and welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, July 1st, 2022. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week, we're sharing a very special episode of Rabble Radio. It would be an understatement to say that the COVID-19 pandemic has dramatically changed life in Canada. After 2 years since the pandemic came into our lives, we're still grappling with a new normal and grieving the experiences, time, and loved ones we lost during the worst waves of the pandemic. No one knows this grief better than our healthcare workers. Nurses and healthcare workers stepped up during the pandemic to face COVID firsthand, working extended shifts with decreased or no time off, adapting to changes in methods of delivering care, facing burnout, stress, anxiety, and sometimes contracting COVID themselves. All the while, they were also encountering a small population of the public convinced that COVID-19 was not something to take seriously. Today, we give our healthcare heroes a voice. The Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions and Rabble.ca present Nurses' Voices, stories of courage and determination in the face of COVID-19. We interviewed over 25 healthcare professionals from across the country and asked them to share what they'd like our audience to know about their experiences working through this deadly virus. Today on the show, we're sharing snippets of those interviews. We start at the beginning of COVID in Canada. At first, Canadian healthcare workers and the general public alike weren't sure how severe the novel COVID virus would be or what extent it would affect our country. But when it arrived with a bang. Grocery store shelves were left bare, supply chains were being disrupted, nursing homes were overwhelmed with COVID cases. The country swiftly went into lockdown, and in the hospitals, many nurses and healthcare workers were scrambling to learn and meet the new care standards. Some hospitals were lacking proper PPE, and many nurses, afraid to bring the virus home, were living in garages, basements, RVs, hotels, or otherwise isolated from their families. In this first round of interviews, you'll hear Stephen Wenzel speak to Donna Gillis, a clinical nurse educator for the COVID response in Nova Scotia, and Alan Morrington, a registered nurse in an intensive care unit in Ontario. They speak about their experiences during the onset of the pandemic in Canada. Take a listen.
As the pandemic first hit, I'm thinking January, February 2020, what, if any, impact were you anticipating that COVID-19 could have on Canada?
Well, I think Stephen, you know, obviously it was something new that we were hearing. I know at the time I was actually in Toronto over a number of weeks. We were just in the midst of, you know, trying to negotiate our provincial contract. So I knew, you know, a lot of the stakeholders, you know, our owner president, first vice president, CEO, chief negotiator, they were in constant contact with the Ontario government at the time. So, you know, they would relay things to the team. But I think, you know, to your point, certainly we had a reasonable understanding that there was going to be some direct impacts to healthcare. You know, I think we'd be kidding ourselves if, you know, anybody had any idea the true impacts in March, you know, when everything, you know, came to a seeming halt. And obviously what we saw initially, you know, with, you know, the pandemic supply of PPE was obviously a fallacy. So I'm an ICU nurse. So at that time, I was newly elected in the new year to a role with the union, and pretty much all that time was rescinded. I was called back to the intensive care unit. Obviously, you know, we were prepared to surge and we tried to diminish capacity within the hospital, but we certainly had, like many other places, you know, we had, you know, rationing of our PPE. And it was quite a tumultuous time, a lot of unknowns and no doubt a lot of fear. On a personal note, I was quite quite worried. I've got, two teenage kids and, my wife's a critical care nurse as well. So, personally, there was just a lot of unknowns and I wouldn't say not panic on my part, but, definitely a guarded awareness of, how severe, the potential was for sure.
So taking you back to this time, Donna, I'm wondering, when was the first time you heard about COVID-19 and what was your first impression?
In February of 2020, I was down in Chicago. I was a review panel member for the NCLEX exam, and there was some rumblings then of it. So that's when we first started hearing about it. And then when I got back to Canada, I had met nurses all over Canada. So we were texting back and forth, talking about, are any of you guys sick and stuff like that. So that was the first rumblings of it. So I came from Chicago, went back to work. I think it was around the middle of March, we shut the OR down to just emergencies and that sort of thing. So we had lots of time to practice simulations of what we were going to do if we had like a stat C-section and the mom was positive. So we were spending a lot of time, close contact, doing simulations and education. So masks were available. Everything that we needed was available to us. But, we're nurses. We didn't really wear all that stuff because we didn't really know a lot about it. So we had close contact. And then that was a Friday. On the Sunday, we were in lockdown, Nova Scotia. So we were allowed to walk around the block. So I did a walk around the block. And when I got home, I had these extreme leg pains, felt unwell, called my manager. She said, stay home just in case. I didn't fit the criteria for a swab at that time because I wasn't fevered. I hadn't recently traveled. So then I just kind of felt generally unwell. Finally, Tuesday, I felt really crappy, went for a swab. And then the next day, April 1st, I was positive. A couple of days later, I got really sick again. So I stayed home. My husband was positive as well, but he had no symptoms. Yeah. And then I went back to work about 2 weeks later.
Do you have kids in the house?
I did. My son had actually been down in Cuba. I think he was the last plane to leave. He went with a high school trip. And so he had come home and we were scared of him. So he was in isolation in the basement. So he finished out that isolation and then had to stay in another isolation because we exposed him to it. Yeah,
definitely. I'm wondering, as far as your workplace goes, when the pandemic first hit, how did your work change and how did that affect your workplace?
From living in Nova Scotia, we've been very lucky. We didn't have the hospitalizations that Ontario and Alberta seen, but it did change. People are scared. There's still a stigma attached to people that are COVID positive. There's always that, what did you do wrong to get it? Our nurses and healthcare workers are exhausted. They thought the end would be like in a couple of months, and it's now been almost 2 years. So they don't see an end in sight, and they're being pulled in every direction. Nurses have worked short-staffed for the last, I don't know how many years, and now it's even worse.
How did you feel going into work in the days after Canada went into a national state of lockdown during that time?
I think everyone was just on edge and we were all bringing our own baggage to work. So like I said, my son was in Cuba. I was worried sick. I was looking for flights to go to Cuba in case, he got to the airport and had a fever. So I think we all took our baggage with us. We either have young children or elderly parents that we were terrified of bringing this home to. My husband, we have a travel trailer. We set that up in the yard just in case I needed to go stay in there. And I think you heard lots of stories of healthcare workers doing similar things like that. You were worried about going to the grocery stores. We were washing down our groceries. But going into the hospital and not really knowing what to do and how to prevent it. And because I did everything right when I got it, or I thought I was, but it certainly frayed our nerves. It was a hard go.
In our next two interviews, Wenzel breaks down the next chapter of the pandemic, May 2020 to January 2021. At this point, vaccines are not yet ready for mass distribution. Hospitals are flooded and nurses are facing burnout. Meanwhile, a wide population of the public begins to feel restless and fed up with their province's health restrictions. Canada has another big wave of COVID-19 cases at this time. In this section, you'll hear from Jens Gunderman, a registered nurse in Alberta, and Tracy Zambori, a long-term care nurse and president of the Saskatchewan Union of Nurses, to talk about the frustration that came from the public's resistance to COVID-19 health restrictions.
Taking you back to this time, Jens, I'm wondering if you can describe what the most challenging part of this pandemic has been for you.
Yeah, there was a wave after wave. And I know they, you know, the governments then attempted to slowly open things, see how that turns out. The virus keeps spreading. And with us, it's the same thing, right? There's always the demand to get procedures done and patients are waiting to have things done. Nobody wants to be delayed. And it was frustrating as a nurse to be working when you're seeing it firsthand in the hospital, what is happening with this virus. And because we know that, we as nurses, most of us basically go home and don't do much on the social activity parts of it. We try to do our part and, you know, you're masking all the time. You're just going for essentials and you're masking all day at work. So to hear people say that they're tired of it and they're tired of masking to go to the grocery store for half an hour and an hour, and we're doing it all day for 8 to 12 hours. And then when you go home and you have to get groceries, you do it again type of thing. It was very frustrating. And, you know, as nurses, we're just trying to protect ourselves, which then, you know, protects the patients. Nurses were getting sick. And we realized that too, that if we catch the virus, then we are sick. And then our unit is even more short-staffed as it was before. And it was very difficult to deal with. And I know of nurses now that still, they caught the virus early on in the pandemic in that first spring, summer, and they still have not come fully back to work. They are still have those, as you said, the long COVID symptoms. And that's how debilitating that disease is. And that's what's frustrating too, is that people were not understanding. I think people were really looking at numbers of how many people died, and it was a minimal number, and it was people with comorbidities, but yet they failed to realize that we were doing all this to protect the vulnerable, which are the people with comorbidities or the people in long-term care centers and things like that. That's why we were doing all the masking, the lockdowns, and things like that, is to protect those most vulnerable. So it's also frustrating to hear them say, well, it only affects people who have issues to begin with. And, you know, it was very hard to hear people almost saying that it's no big loss, they were going to die anyway. It's very, very sad to hear those kinds of things.
As we learned more about the virus, how you felt about the pandemic change as you learned more?
I became more and more resolved that public health orders had to be followed, because what we saw in that time frame was a complete disregard of the professional opinion of the healthcare professionals in this province, that the registered nurses, the physicians, the public health officers, the medical health officers, and the people who actually understood what was going on and kept saying that we needed to have stricter public health orders were disregarded. I mean, we had lockdown for a small amount of time and then it was lifted. And it wasn't lifted because of advice from the healthcare professionals. It was lifted from pressure because people wanted to be able to live their lives. We didn't want to have the Trudeau summer. This kind of nonsense, this kind of political rhetoric that was happening. And, you know, I know healthcare is politics, it's politicized, but it's always been up at a higher echelon. We know that. But what we started to see, and it got worse as the pandemic progressed, was those politics came right down to putting a divide between the healthcare provider and the patient. And that had never happened before. the, you know, that we were being met with disregard, with disdain, with abuse, and even as far as being hated, as being threatened for actually trying to save people's lives. And the leadership in this province was doing very little to stop it. And in fact, it even in some areas stoking the fire. And that was a shock. That became very hard to take. It was so disappointing, demoralizing, and it was a really difficult period that continues on right to today. This kind of misinformation and outright disdain for research and evidence, for science. And it is incredibly disappointing that those opinions were ignored in favor of a very vocal base of people who really didn't believe that what we were saying was true and that what was happening in the hospitals really wasn't happening, that we were exaggerating what was going on. And it really became a very tense situation in that time frame. And we saw after June, the cases in Saskatchewan explode. And we had a disaster on our hands, a crisis, truly, in every corner of this province.
2 years on, and the majority of Canadians are now vaccinated. There is a sense that while we might not ever return to normal, we might be seeing the light at the end of the tunnel that leads to a new normal. For the nurses, though, the experiences of working in a hospital over the past 2 years has created haunting memories they will carry with them for a long time. We're now seeing a large percentage of nurses thinking of leaving their careers to pick up a new profession, marred by the experience of their time providing care during COVID. Here are Stephanie Noel, a registered nurse in New Brunswick, and Christina Woodcock, a critical care nurse in Manitoba, as they reflect on their time working during a pandemic and what got them through this incredibly taxing time.
I'm wondering, if we look back on the hardest days of the pandemic, how did you get through it and what kept you going?
So when I went to the extramural, I was called out on a prompt at the end of November 2020. I went to work in a level 3 nursing home in the COVID unit. I have to say that was the most surreal experience of my life. It was walking into literally a tarped area. It was double doored, so you would walk into one place and then you'd have to completely close one door to open the COVID area. It was 11 patients. The severity was different, but these patients were a level 3. So some of them can't walk. Some of them move around in wheelchairs. They have dementia. They're used to having their families around all the time. They're locked in this unit. They moved the COVID patients to one section of the establishment. So clothing was put away. Everybody's furniture was moved into there. So the rooms were bare. It was so hollow feeling. It was surreal. Like, it felt like in a prison. Like, honestly, the patients had their bed. We had hospital gowns for them. They had no TVs. They had nothing. And they were scared and they were lonely. And I remember there was some patients that they were questioning where was I from and how long I had been a nurse. I remember this one lady, all she wanted to do was touch my face because she said, I just want to touch somebody. It was devastating and she wasn't doing well and she just wanted to touch. She was trying to touch me and our gowns. I remember the sound of our gowns going swish, swish because it was a plastic gown. And you could hear that all around the unit because that's all it was. And she was so sad because she couldn't see any of our faces because we had the gowns, the long gloves, shoe coverings, our big mask and a shield. And, you know, even our hairs were tied back. So we kind of all looked the same, you know, except being different colors. That's all. I mean, it was so sickening to watch like these poor patients. And then I remember having some patients that were okay and talking, and an hour later they were unconscious. It was just devastating.
when you're dealing with patients who are so stressed and sick and scared with COVID-19, how do you help them get through it? And what would you tell these patients?
Well, it's in my line of work, generally speaking, I see them when they're at their sickest. I would say to patients, you know, work hard. The most critical time is over, but the hardest time is just beginning. Rehabilitation, take your stories back to your communities and back to, you know, where you've come from and into your families, and really let people have some tangible experience with what COVID-19 really looks like, because it's we hear a lot about how many people survive COVID-19 versus how many people die, but we don't get a very clear picture about what surviving looks like after COVID-19 and how much work is yet to come for these people who do survive. So I think for people who don't end up in the ICU, you know, same thing. Let your families and your communities know that this isn't something that's been fear-mongered. This isn't something that we're making up. We have quite a lot of work to do as it is. We don't need to create more work for ourselves. That's not what's happening here. This is real. And don't be afraid of COVID-19. Just do the things you need to do to protect yourself so you can be confident that if you do contract COVID-19, as I did as a triple vaccinated person, that you have a mild, short-lived illness and, you know, don't require medical care, because right now there's just really not a lot of space in the system to accommodate that care.
And on the hardest days of the pandemic, Christina, how did you get through it? What's kept you going?
I think as somebody who has been nursing for a long time, what's got me through many hard things outside the pandemic and certainly within the pandemic is looking around at the strength of the teams that I work with in emergency and in critical care. The expectations of us have been unreasonable, but we keep showing up. And I look around at the teams that I work with, and I think that their resiliency and their compassion and their ability to keep showing up day after day could be very well the greatest example of love and support that I've ever seen. And I'm inspired by the team of people that I work with. Also my family, you know, there's something to be said for trying to forget about the things or not focusing on the things that kind of bring you stress and bring you, you know, pain and really focusing, especially in times like this. This is a global pandemic that's been not just difficult for people in healthcare. It's been difficult for people across the board for different reasons. And I think that it's a good time to learn to be mindful of focusing on the things that bring us light. And that's something I've really tried to do. We've really tried to do within our family on the worst days and really every day.
That was a series of interviews conducted by Stephen Wenzel. The voices you heard were Donna Gillis, Alan Warrington, Jens Gunderman, Tracy Zambori, Stephanie Noel, and Christina Woodcock. If you'd like to hear more of their stories and from many other healthcare workers across Canada, please read the new book, Nurses' Voices, Stories of Courage and Determination in the Face of COVID-19, presented by the Canadian Federation of Nurses Unions and Rabble.ca. Thank you to all the nurses who participated in this project, and to Stephen Wenzel and Matthew Behrens, who conducted the interviews. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, I'll hand it over to the editor of Rabble.ca, Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. In case you missed it this week, Rabble's national politics reporter Stephen Wenzel covered a report from the Toronto Police Association that highlighted the disproportionate use of force against Black and other racialized communities. The report showed that while Toronto's Black population accounted for about 10% of the total population of the city, they accounted for 22.6% of individuals who were on the receiving end of police violence in 2021.
Toronto Police Chief James Raymer apologized and pledged to do better, but the No Pride in Policing Coalition said that this was not an adequate response. In fact, the Black community never asked for an apology, said U of T professor Dr. Beverly Bain, a spokesperson for the No Pride in Policing Coalition. "Your police officers are responsible for the racism," she said. "You have not told us how you're going to stop the killing of our people." This week, Labour reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga reported that the Alberta Federation of Labour is calling on the federal government for more support for workers who want to transition from the oil and gas industry to the clean energy sector. Alberta Federation of Labour President Gil McGowan said in a press conference that we need more than just a few press releases and a few training programs. We need a plan for economic transformation, and we need the money and political will to back it up. That doesn't mean shutting down our oil and gas sector, but it does mean helping them pivot and decarbonize so that they can remain competitive and viable for as long as possible. It also means diversifying beyond oil and gas. Federal Minister of Labour Seamus O'Regan promised McGowan that his government's plan to create a carbon net zero economy includes creating jobs in the clean energy sector as oil and gas is phased out. O'Regan said that the government's plan will be formulated in partnership with unions and the public. In international news, Rabble recently attended the Collision Conference in Toronto and covered a press conference held there by the Black Invaders Alliance and U.S. Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett. Plaskett, who is leading a new caucus in the U.S. House of Representatives to support Black Invaders, explained the inequities that Black entrepreneurs face in the United States. Plaskett shared, quote, "There was a record $137 billion in venture capital investment in 2021, but only 1.2% of all venture capital funding in the United States went to Black founders in the first quarter of last year. Only 4% of Black businesses are still operational after 3.5 years, compared to the average 55% of all other businesses," end quote. Rabble also wrapped up our Pride coverage with a piece from LGBTQ+ scholar and activist Ali Patel about the invisibility of the South Asian queer community. Patel writes that LGBTQ+ representation was, and still is, heavily Western normative and perpetuates a stereotype that only white people can be queer. Finally, BC Premier John Horgan announced this week that he would be stepping down from his role in the fall. Horgan said that being premier was the honor of his life, but that after his recent battle with throat cancer, he feared he did not have the energy to lead the province over the next 2 years. Horgan serves the MLA for the riding of Langford, Juan de Fuca, and led the provincial NDP to two election victories in 2017 and in 2020. You can catch all of those stories and much, much more on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. And finally, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.